It's 5:06. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferris. You're with us on the Ideas Network. Coming up, we'll meet a man from the country of Lebanon who went on a tour of places named Lebanon in the United States, including two here in Wisconsin.
First, we heard earlier in the show that the state's budget writing committee was debating the budget that will be in place for the entire UW system for the next 2 years.
Like other major elements of the governor's proposed budget, funding for the UW system saw disagreements, not just between Democrats and Republicans, but between Governor Walker and some members of his own party.
Since the start of the program, the committee has since voted, and WPR's Capital Bureau Chief, Sean Johnson, is back with us now to tell us how the vote went. Sean, thanks for coming back on with us.
And you met.
And Sean, so the Republican UW budget motion just passed the Finance Committee, as we said, on a 12-4 party line vote. What did you see there?
There was a lot of discussion about, at its core, sort of whether this budget increases funding for the University of Wisconsin or not. And because over the past, you know, several budgets, when Republicans have been in control of state government, every budget since they've been in control of state government, the state has cut its share of funding to the University of Wisconsin. This budget would increase state funding to the University of Wisconsin by $36 million, but it includes a continued tuition freeze, which means the university is missing out on a lot of money that it would have had otherwise.
On the other hand, Governor Walker had wanted to give a 5% tuition cut after a year, and that did not happen.
Yeah, and that was the, you know, inter-party disagreement that you were, you know, referring to earlier. This is a situation where Walker wanted a 5% tuition cut in the second year of his budget. Republicans did not go along with that. That was really the big piece of this budget where they disagreed with the governor. They took that tuition cut out. And what that means is they will have a continued tuition freeze at the University of Wisconsin, which, you know, it's not what the governor wanted, but it's kind of a big deal. This is something where by the end of this next 2 year budget, Wisconsin will have frozen tuition for in-state students at the UW for 6 straight years. So, you know, on the one hand, that's one way to keep college costs down. It's a way to keep college more affordable. On the other hand, that's a lot of revenue that the university is missing out on at a time when it's also seeing its state funding cut.
Right. And has the UW reacted to that continued freeze for 2 more years?
The UW put out a statement praising the budget that passed the that passed the budget committee. It was a statement from Ray Cross, the president of the UW system. He said, "I'd like to thank the members of the Joint Finance Committee for their support of the UW system." He said there were some issues in the budget that, you know, they had some concerns with, but by and large, praising Republicans for passing this budget. The University of Wisconsin Board of Regents initially asked for $42.5 million in this budget. So this budget falls short of that, but not by much. It is an increase, whereas the past several budgets for the university have been cuts.
And like you said, Sean, it sounds as though even though Governor Walker didn't get his 5% tuition cut, he is, in a sense, declaring victory with the 2 year freeze, as is a co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee, Alberta Darling, who was quoted as saying, this is really good news for students in Wisconsin.
Yeah, they're going to be able to point to the continued tuition freeze at the University of Wisconsin system and say, you know, we looked out for affordability here. You know, this ended up being sort of the middle ground in this year's budget debate. I mean, there was a time when the idea of freezing tuition was somewhere the state just didn't go because that tuition is so important to the university. It makes up about a quarter of their funding. And it's, you know, it's a user fee for people who want to go to college. They are paying a part of that cost through tuition. So it's not something the state was willing to freeze in the past. We crossed that bridge a few years ago at this point, and you know, now it's something that they're going to continue. There was some talk earlier in the budget cycle from some Republican lawmakers of maybe letting the university increase tuition in the second year of this budget. But it looks like that's not going to happen. Just to give you an idea of, you know, if the university had been allowed to increase tuition just to keep up with the pace of inflation, that is tie tuition increase to the consumer price index, it would have generated $50 million in revenue. So that's money that it's not seeing to help it fund its operations.
We're talking with Sean Johnson right now, WPR's Capital Bureau Chief, and he's with us for an update on the Joint Finance Committee's vote on the UW system budget for the next 2 years. And Sean, more action on this involved performance-based funding. Where did that end up?
Yeah, what the budget committee ultimately approved was $31 million in new state funding tied to performance measures. And this is something that the governor proposed in his budget, although what the finance committee ultimately supported was a lot more general than what the governor called for. I mean, the governor was very specific in what those performance metrics should be, you know, things like the number of math, science, and engineering degrees that a campus awards would lead to more performance funding, the amount of faculty instruction hours versus, you know, research hours would lead to more performance funding, and on and on and on. The governor is really prescriptive in his budget. This budget that passed the legislature's Joint Finance Committee is a lot more vague. It leaves it up to the University of Wisconsin Board of Regents to set those performance metrics. It also spends less money on performance funding than the governor would have. He set aside about $42 million. They passed $31 million.
Was there any sort of discussion at this stage of the game, maybe a little early, about what the region's metrics might be as opposed to what the governor was thinking about?
It's kind of up to them, although they gave really broad goals. They said the regions have to grow and ensure student access, improve and excel student progress and completion, expand contributions to the workforce, enhance operational efficiency. And that's about it. And so the university can then come back and say, here's what that means practically and how we're going to divvy up this money. And they'd have to present that to the legislature's budget committee. So, you know, a lot more flexibility for the university to decide how they want to meet those goals. And that ultimately means they're going to have more flexibility to decide how this performance funding gets divvied up among the campuses.
And Sean, there's been a salary increase for UW employees being considered, but it didn't look like they'd vote on it today. What happened with that one ultimately?
They did not vote on that today, but the Republican co-chairs of the budget committee said that they would support 2% and 2% salary increases that would happen later in the budget, and that would mirror the increases that other state employees would receive. You know, full disclosure, we're university employees, so pretty sure that would apply to us as well. But to fund that, they didn't say exactly how they would fund that, but we know that the governor had set aside about $35 million to backfill his tuition cut, or partially backfill his tuition cut in state funding. They didn't approve that money, so they've got that money to use on other parts of the state budget. One area that they could apply some of that funding is for salary increases for your University of Wisconsin employees.
And Sean, there is more to it than what we've talked about. This was part of an omnibus motion, which means there's a lot of things going on inside this one motion. Can you talk a little bit about the proposed Tommy G. Thompson Center on Public Leadership?
That was interesting because we heard about this earlier in the week. Republican leaders, all the legislative leaders and Governor Walker held a press conference to announce this new Tommy G. Thompson Leadership Center, which would be housed at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. The document that we saw today confirmed that it would receive $3 million in the next budget. That would be state funding. It said $500,000 of that money would be set aside for campuses other than Madison to bring in speakers. And as far as what kind of speakers those might be, we don't know. But we do know that the board that would run this new Tommy G. Thompson Center would be dominated by Republican appointees. So you'd have somebody there from Tommy Thompson's foundation would be on the board. You'd have a member who had been in the Thompson administration or reported directly to the governor during his many years as Wisconsin's governor would be on that board. And then you'd have four members who would be appointed by legislative leaders. They are Republicans right now. So there would be an opportunity for them to have a Republican influence over this new center at the UW-Madison.
This comes at an interesting time. We've been hearing over the past months that some Republicans, including Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, have been interested in improving what he sees, for instance, as an intellectual diversity problem at UW campuses. And in specific, he says not enough conservative speakers. Is this part of the remedy to that for someone like Assembly Speaker Voss?
I think he views it that way. And I think he's really the driving force behind this. You know, all indications are that he was the one pushing for, you know, these elements of the plan. So the Tommy G. Thompson Center, according to the university, has been in works for a couple years now. And the University of Wisconsin-Madison says this is going to be a center that's dedicated to his legacy and would have, would promote nonpartisan research. Some of the wording that they used to describe it. Speaker Voss, when he got up to talk about this at the press conference earlier this week, described it as something that would offset what he views as the liberal bias at campuses in Wisconsin and elsewhere. So that's how he views it. This board may view it the same way. Some of the people who have created it have said it's not their intent to be partisan by any means, but that possibility exists just in the way that this new board is structured.
And Sean, just a couple seconds left, but we have this motion vote from the Joint Finance Committee. Does this mean that this is set in stone, or is it likely that the legislature could still come in here and tweak some of this?
It's definitely not set in stone. The Assembly still has to sign off. The Senate still has to sign off. It could be trickier in the Senate, where even though Republicans have a big majority, if they get a handful of Republican senators who decide they don't like something, they could dig in their heels and demand changes. So I wouldn't say it's a done deal, but the Budget Committee's okay is a big step.
Sean, thanks a lot for joining us.
You're welcome.
Yeah, Sean Johnson, WPR's Capital Bureau Chief.
You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up this weekend is Memorial Day, the unofficial start of summer. We'll check out the summer movie season with Reggie Ponder, a.k.a. Reggie the Real Critic.
First, our next guest is from Lebanon, the country. And last year, he went on a tour of places in the United States named Lebanon.
And it turns out there are a lot of Lebanons in the United States, over 50 of them, mostly concentrated in what are considered conservative red states.
Fadi Bukaram set off on a road trip during last year's presidential election campaign. He rented an RV and tried to make it to every Lebanon in the United States.
The trip was, as it happens, cut short when his RV was stolen in New Mexico. But before that, he made it to 28 Lebanons around the country, including two here in Wisconsin, in Dodge County and Waupaca County.
Fadi Bukaram joins us now. He's a photographer from Lebanon, the country, and you could see his photos and essays at his website, Lebanon USA. We have a link on the Central Time Facebook page. Fadi, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Fadi, why did you decide to take this trip?
Well, it all started from when I was living in San Francisco. I lived in San Francisco for a few years while I was getting my MBA, and at the time, Google Maps was still new, and I wanted to see the map of Lebanon. So I typed in Lebanon into Google Maps, and it took me to Lebanon, Oregon. And at the time, I was like, why would there be a Lebanon in the United States? I had no idea. So one after the next, I started finding a lot of them, and I compiled the list, and it turns out there's over 40 of them. And I thought, if I ever retire one day, maybe that'll be a good trip, because I like doing road trips and all that. And then in 2016, I decided to quit my job, and I thought, well, that's a good opportunity. I'll do it now and see what comes off it.
I understand your friends were kind of worried about the idea of a man from the Middle East taking a tour of red state America in the midst of the Donald Trump presidential campaign with lots of attention to immigrants and people from Muslim countries.
My friends, especially the photographer friends, are not just from Lebanon. Most of them are either, are from the United States in San Francisco or California or New York, the coast part. So it's not just Lebanese. It was them, the Americans, who were telling me, well, wait a second, you're going to, Donald Trump America. Maybe you need to, pay attention and you need to, worry about things. And to be honest, even though I had lived in the United States, I had never been into the middle of the country. And I thought, well, maybe they're right. They would know better than me. So in the beginning, I was cautious. But then it didn't take much after that to see that you know, even Americans have a wrong idea about what the middle of the U.S. looks like. So their worries were unfounded, at least for me.
So what kind of reactions did you get from people in these communities called Lebanon around the United States?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, people in Lebanon, in the Lebanons of the U.S., their reaction to me was, they were surprised. But at the same time, most of them were actually really pleased to have met someone from the old country of Lebanon. So it was a combination of surprise, but also very welcoming. So it was a good experience from that point. But let me say this: most of them actually would tell me, "Well, you pronounce it Lebanon, we pronounce it Lebanon." So there's a bit of a difference in the pronunciation.
We have two Lebanons here in Wisconsin, in Dodge County and Waupaca County. You visited both.
The one thing I remember is that most people didn't know about the existence of the other town. When I visited the one in Waupac, and I told them, like, there's a Lebanon just like a few hours north. I was like, really? We knew there were two Romes in Wisconsin. We didn't know there were two Lebanons.
You wrote that your visit to Waupaca County triggered a memory of your childhood. Could you tell us about that?
Lebanon in Waupaca County had a really interesting experience for me. The one thing is that there were a lot of cow packers. And the first night I went there, I parked in a church parking lot, and I didn't see a lot of people. But then I woke up at dawn, and when I woke up and I got out the door from the RV, the first thing that I could smell was the cow manure. Now, the thing is, I mean, even when I was growing up, the smell of cow manure felt something good to me. It was like a happy memory. But for some reason, I didn't know why. And in Lebanon, Waupaca County, it's when it finally hit me, in that during the late 80s, the Lebanese Civil War was still going on strong in its final leg. And at one point, we wanted to flee the war because we were living in Beirut and there were bombs all over. So our neighbors that how about we go all together to the mountain, to their village, and we said, okay, so we fled out of Beirut, and we went there. And in that village, it was, you know, all farmers and cows and all that. So the striking difference is that there was the smell of cows, but at the same time, it was the smell of being, you know, free and not afraid of bombs. So it was just like a week of playing, and that memory was buried in my mind for the longest time. And it was only when I went to Lebanon, Waupaca County that it kind of like got back to my consciousness. So I stayed three days in Lebanon, Waupaca County, and it was the first time where I didn't actually speak to anyone. It was just like I was just enjoying the whole memory recollection of that time, and I was enjoying the smell, as funny as it sounds. Smell of cow manure.
Are you staying in touch with anyone you met on the trip?
It's interesting you asked me this, but yesterday I mailed 5 letters to people who I've met through the trip. I mean, there are a lot of people who I'm still in contact with through either Facebook or by email, but some of these people who were like old, maybe, who don't use email, they only had given me their addresses and they asked me, you know, to send them letters. So yesterday I just wrote, you know, 5 handwritten letters and sent them by snail mail. And for some reason it felt better. There's something a little bit more personal when you send and receive something that's handwritten as opposed to emails or Facebook.
Are you thinking of making another visit to the Lebanons in the United States?
I'm hoping, and I'm working on it this year, hopefully get some government funding from here, that I could be able to repeat the trip next year. I want to visit some of the Lebanons I've visited because some of them had cedar trees, cedars from Lebanon, and they had the trees had gone away, like they died through the years. So they asked me if I could bring back cedars from my Lebanon, and I said I will try to do that. So that's one. Two, there were just a few Lebanons that I've missed because when my RV got stolen in Albuquerque, I had just to end it short. So hopefully I'm going to be able to repeat it next year if I'm able to get the funds.
Would you like to see more Americans make the trip in the other direction, maybe visit your home country of Lebanon?
How to say that? I mean, I came to the U.S., and I'm visiting these towns called Lebanon in the U.S., but unintentionally became me talking to them about my Lebanon. But most of the time, it was me just listening to what they were saying. And just the act of listening to people, to someone else, you know, can open up a lot of rooms for conversation. And I would hope that if people were interested, they'd be more than welcome to come here. I mean, I would be a guide, if possible, for anyone who's interested. But yeah, I'd love to see people from the U.S. come more and more.
Fadi, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
That was Fadi Bukaram, photographer from Lebanon. He's got photos and essays about his trip on his website, Lebanon USA. We have a link on the Central Time Facebook page.
Coming up after the news, we'll get the inside scoop on what's hitting movie theaters this summer, and it all kicks off this weekend with the big Memorial Day movie weekend. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferrett. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.
Listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferrett. Memorial Day weekend is the unofficial start of summer, but the summer movie season has been going on for a few weeks now. Some of the biggest hits have already been released, like Guardians of the Galaxy 2 and The Fate of the Furious.
We're talking about summer movies right now, and we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What are you excited to see in theaters this summer? What summer movie have you already seen that you'd recommend? You can call us right now at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Reggie Ponder joins us now. He's known as Reggie the Real Critic. He appears weekly on Vocalo in Chicago and critiques movies for several other media outlets. Reggie, welcome back to the show.
Hi, you guys. How you guys doing?
Well, pretty well, though I got to say I'm having a bit of a movie drought myself. My list of gotta-sees keeps getting longer. But a couple of these movies, summer movies we think have already been out. Guardians of the Galaxy sequel, Alien Covenant out already, I think. Is the summer movie season getting earlier and earlier every year?
So what's happening actually is that to avoid overcrowding, what the studios are doing is that they're strategically releasing their big films throughout the year. And so what that means for the summer, quote-unquote, season is that it starts a little earlier and it actually ends a little later. And so you kind of see that they're playing chess with making sure that their films don't bump up against another film to maximize revenues. But that's actually not necessarily great for the box office because you want people to see a whole host of films as opposed to just going to see one film during that weekend.
You know, I usually think of summer as blockbuster season, and it definitely seems like it still is. But as I was looking over the list of what's coming out, it also seemed like they were more thoughtful, sometimes independent movies that were slower paced and more about, you know, great acting than just, you know, the pyrotechnics of the Fast and the Furious franchise or Despicable Me. It seems like there's a lot there.
Veronica, I think you are absolutely right. And I think what it is that Hollywood is recognizing a little bit better that women constitute over 52% of the movie-going audience and actually drive who and what movies we go see. So all that pyrotechnics and blowing up stuff, my wife says, you're going to see that? Okay, I'll see you later. I've seen it, been there, done that. But can we have something with a little bit more meat, so to speak, to it? One of the things that I do want to speak to, since we are talking about that the season has already started, when you look at a movie like Fate of the Furious, and this movie already has made $1.2 billion at the box office. Mm. Then you look at another movie, which is not at the didn't come out during the summertime, but it's still playing and actually still in the top 10, which is Beauty and the Beast, and it made another $1 billion. Then you throw on Guardians of the Galaxy, which is right now at $740 billion worldwide. These movies, I do think that they're doing a good job in terms of spreading them out so that they can make maximum revenue. Again, they do need to pepper it, I think, Veronica, like you said, with these other movies that are kind of thoughtful and that don't rely on the blow 'em up, bang 'em up. Actually relies on some character development.
You mentioned those are international box office numbers. Does it help to have, you know, things that speak in all languages, like, I don't know, Fast Cars and Explosions?
Come on, Rob. You already answered that. Of course it does. That is universal language. Let's jump in the car. Let's blow up some things. Let's run away from some people. People can enjoy that and have a little fun.
Well, I want to start listening to some of what's out there. And here's one that's already out. It's starring Amy Schumer and Goldie Hawn. And this is the movie Snatch. Reggie, can you set it up for us?
Well, this is set up to be a movie about them getting taken, actually. This is like the light Taken, if you will. But what is really happening here is that Schumer is a really happy-go-lucky and adventurous, but her mom is not. And what they're doing throughout this Snatched episode is they're learning more about each other and actually resolving some family issues.
Here's a clip.
Mom, look how fun you were.
Pack your bags.
We're going to South America.
Absolutely not. Everybody knows you need 2 years to plan a vacation.
You don't do anything fun anymore.
That's not true. I've been taking sculpting lessons at the Y.
From the trailer to the movie Snatched. And it looks like it's a buddy action comedy, but starring two women from different generations. That's not usually the setup for your buddy action comedy.
It's not. And again, I do think that Hollywood is getting a little smarter. Understanding that you do have to have things that women would like to watch. And when I'm so, quote-unquote, dragged to that movie, I find out that I like it, too. Say, oh, man, that's fun. We had a good time. And so I think what it's doing is also expanding the palette of men who have to go on that date night, if you will.
And here's another one, Reggie. This is, I feel like, summertime bread and butter movie stuff, your blockbuster fare, Baywatch. This is starring Zac Efron and Dwayne Johnson, and it looks like they're doing more than saving people's lives.
They are, and this one actually, what it is that firstly, it's funny. It's so much more funnier than I had expected, and they are doing more than saving lives. It's a buddy film because it is a ensemble cast that goes along with Efron and The Rock.
I thought we were lifeguards.
Everything that you guys are talking about sounds like a really entertaining but far-fetched TV show.
Imagine that, a really entertaining but far-fetched TV show as a movie. And I guess you're saying it works, Reggie.
It does. I was really surprised because I think the writing in this one is smart, and The Rock is really funny here. I'm not saying this is the movie that you have to run out and go see, but I am saying that if you go see it, you will have a good time. It is a funny movie, and I think that they do a good job in bonding and making those characters all work together.
Before I move on from Baywatch, I got to ask if you can spoil it for me. Is there a David Hasselhoff cameo?
I can't. I'm not going to do that.
You're not at liberty to divulge that information.
Why would you even ask that, Rob? Reggie has
I'm sorry to put you in a sorry to put you in an awkward spot there.
But Rob, you can call me after we get off the air.
Excellent.
No, I can't tell you. I refuse.
All right. We'll go with that. Let's move on to a franchise here, and there are lots of these, of course. This is a franchise I liked up to a point. Alien, then Aliens, Alien 3, the fourth one I even liked. Prometheus, the prequel, it turned out, I didn't like. What do we know about Alien Covenant?
So Alien Covenant actually takes off from Prometheus. Mm. And so for people who liked Prometheus and how it was in some ways a reboot, this actually will give you some insight into what happened after that. And It is an interesting film. It's scary at certain points. And Rob, you know, I've told you, and I don't want to say it to Veronica because I don't want her to think that I'm soft, but I'm scared of all these kind of movies, you know, aliens popping out and doing all these other types of things. And so I think that overall that the movie works. It must have, because it did $36 million at the box office. It did come in at number one, and it is a follow-up to Prometheus.
Here's a listen to a bit of the trailer from Alien Covenant.
This crew is made up of couples.
It's the first ever large-scale colonization mission. And everyone back on Earth is really grateful for your hard work. Your courage.
Wow, sounds like a feel-good movie. I hope nothing goes wrong for those adventurous couples in an alien movie.
This is not a feel-good movie. Just to set up just a little bit, is that what you find out is that these explorers are actually going to a place that they think that's habitable, that has water and greenery and air and all that other type of stuff, but they're awakened way earlier than they should be. They hear a beacon that seems like that beacon says that there's life someplace else. And, of course, they go follow the beacon. No, don't
no,
do
never
that.
Never follow the beacon.
Go where you're going. Come on.
Well, I guess we know how that one ends, or at least what happens. And Reggie, there's another that is, I think this one is out right now, Pirates of the Caribbean franchise. Johnny Depp is back at it again as Captain Jack Sparrow. How's this one?
So I was never in love with the franchise, even the first one. I mean, I know people like the first two, and I was really never in love with the franchise, and I'm rooting for it because I'm hoping that I like Depp, and I'm hoping that this resurrects that franchise. And there's some talk that this was the last one, so when you look at the trailer, you'll see something that kind of hints that it's the last one. But the directors and the writers actually of recent have been hinting that it really isn't the last one. I actually like this as how it's set up. I think that the CGI works. So overall, I like it. I wouldn't give this again, another run out and go see. But for people who are into the franchise, I think this is one of the movies that they should check out.
Here's a little taste of that one.
I have heard stories of a mighty Spanish captain who suddenly killed thousands of men.
No. Pirates.
And Reggie, I want to get our callers in on this soon, but I do want to ask you, I feel like I'm over Johnny Depp, and some of this is some of the unsavory, I'm not going to go into the details, but stories that have been about him, and I wonder if that happens to you as a movie critic. Do you ever sort of feel like you lose your taste for an actor or an actress because of stories about their personal life?
Yes, and I think that, yes, that, all I can say to that is absolutely, and it really spoils it for you. And as a film critic, there's some other things that spoil it for you. So, for instance, you have to interview these folks. So let's just say that they're nasty in the interview, or that they're not as nice as you thought that they were. So you try to keep your objectivity and say, okay, I'm not going to let that get into my head, but it does sometimes. And I've had a couple of interviews where it has definitely changed my opinion of folks, but I try when I write my review not to pass that on to the listeners and viewers.
And I bet you won't kiss and tell on that one either.
No, I won't, because I'll have to interview him again.
Right, that makes sense.
But I will tell you is that sometimes because you're in these rooms with these movie stars, and they have to do these junkets over and over and over again, I can see how it becomes very, very tiresome to say the same thing over and over again with the same questions.
We're talking to Reggie Ponder right now, a.k.a. Reggie the Real Critic, and we're talking about summer movies.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. We're going to look at some of the ones coming out. Wonder Woman, Spider-Man, Dunkirk, a Mummy movie with Tom Cruise, and more. Is there a movie that you're looking forward to seeing this weekend, maybe this summer? Have you seen one of these big pre-summer movies already that we've been talking about? What did you think of it? Thumbs up, thumbs down, recommend or not? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll pick up our conversation in just a bit and get to your calls on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. And we're picking up our conversation now with Reggie Ponder about the start of summer movie season.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What are you excited to see in theaters this summer? What have you already seen in the last month or two that you are recommending to people or steering people away from? Do you have a question about one of the movies coming out? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we'll take a caller now. We have Brandy with us from New Berlin. Brandy, hi.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
I'm calling to ask, a friend of mine in Texas had heard a rumor or seen a trailer that there was an upcoming movie on the World War II, the famous Flying Tigers of World War II.
Reggie, have you heard about that?
I have not heard about that, but I will check into that and make sure that I'll follow up on that one. I have not seen that trailer. Have you seen it, or you just heard it from your friend?
Not seen it. I've only heard about it.
Hmm.
Well, Brandy, thanks for calling. We'll check into that. But in the meantime, there is a World War II movie, been seeing trailers for a while, Dunkirk. Christopher Nolan, the director, Harry from One Direction, has at least one of my daughters excited. He is in that. So I'm going to end up seeing this one. What do we know? And this is a huge, you know, the big escape of British troops at the beginning of World War II. What do we know about the movie?
So this film is where the Allied troops come together, and they're fighting Germany. The Germans, in World War II. And this is a much anticipated film. If you've seen, and I haven't seen it, but if you've seen the trailers for this one, it looks really good. It looks good from a writing standpoint, and Nolan is known for his ability to, I think, his ability to put together a story as well as the action that's going to happen here. So it looks really good, and this is one of the films that I am in anticipation for this summer.
Yeah, that'll be interesting, because isn't Christopher Nolan known for these really twisty, brain sort of fogging plots that are really hard to follow? Inception, Interstellar, and this seems like it's more of a straightforward narrative.
Yeah, it does seem like it's a more of a straightforward narrative, but what I'll say is that, again, his ability to take the story and also make sure that it works with the action, because for me, I've liked many of Nolan's films, so yes.
Thanks for that call. Let's check out some more Wonder Woman. This one's coming out pretty soon. Is that this weekend already?
This one is coming out not this weekend. It's we have a few more weeks for Wonder Woman. But what I will tell you is that this is probably the number one film that the public is waiting for. I've looked at a number of polls, and it's on every poll, and it's usually at number one, saying that this is the film. So I'm very excited about this one as well. And I think Rob, your twins, this is the one that they want to see as well.
This is on their list, definitely. We will be seeing this one. And now, this is a DC superhero movie, and that's they haven't done as well as Marvel movies in terms of quality or sales. Are people thinking, oh, this is the one that's going to beat the curse?
People are absolutely thinking that this is the one that will beat the curse. They think that Batman versus Superman introduced that character, made that character look very appealing, and I'm not talking about from the gender perspective, but she looks like this is going to be the superhero that could catapult the DC universe. So I'm totally looking forward to it. I do want to make another note about this film, is that a woman is directing it, and it's the first time in 40 years that you have a woman directing one of the major superhero films.
Wow, yeah, that sounds like something. And the trailer, I did watch the trailer, and I went in thinking, you know, I'm not going to see this movie. But now it looked really good, and now Reggie tells me more about it. It looks like when to see. And Reggie, I want to ask you about one that's probably my family's most anticipated movie, Despicable Me 3. Now, I wasn't crazy about 1, but 2 was hilarious.
So 1 is really interesting, is that I liked 1, and it made worldwide like $450 million, but 2 came out and just crushed that. So it tells you that most people liked 2 much better. and I did as well. Two made like $970 million at the box office. So, of course, you know that there's going to be a three. I am looking forward to this as well. I think that the characters are endearing. The writing is funny. And the look of the film just keeps you involved. When I go, I go with my 18-year-old daughter, and she and I act like little kids. She's having a wonderful time at that movie.
Yeah, same here. We know all the lines now.
Yeah, you quote Despicable Me, too.
I do.
In the workplace.
What do I say?
That's a pretty funny joke.
I am pretty fun.
That's it.
Pretty
fun,
yeah.
Oh, that's good.
We're talking to Reggie Ponder. Reggie, the real critic, about summer movies. One's out, one's not out yet, one's to anticipate. How about, let's go back to superheroes. There's another Spider-Man. Now, how many reboots of Spider-Man are we getting here? We're on like 15
five.
Or something?
We're probably at five. I think it's five, but it could be six. And I think it's smart. Because obviously you can't have the same person playing Spider-Man forever. When you look at Logan, for instance, the Wolverine, you at some point in time he says, "Hey, it's over. I'm not playing this character any longer." So I think it's smart to reboot. It also brings in new people to the franchise. And for some people who don't believe that. Who believe that the other Spider-Man movies have not really lived up to the Spider-Man comic books, this is an opportunity to, quote-unquote, get it right. So I'm looking forward to it as well. I think that the character in Captain America and versus the Avengers, Spider-Man was very, very appealing. Mm-hmm.
And Reggie, let's talk about one more, another in a franchise, War for the Planet of the Apes. Do we really need this one?
Yes.
We do.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes. So you're excited about Despicable Me. Reggie Ponder is excited about War for the Planet of the Apes. I can't wait to see this one. These movies, for me, obviously I have this eerie human connection, but the fighting in it, and it's scary in a way, but it's so riveting. So I can't wait for this movie, and I've seen the trailers. Looks good, and I think that they've been doing a really good job with the last three movies in this franchise.
And here's a little bit from the trailer to that one.
Years from now, your children will ask you, "What did you do in the greatest war?" And you can tell them, "I fought to protect this world."
And that was for you, Reggie.
Thank you so much.
Thank you
so much. Now, I know we ran out of time, so I want to speak real quickly, Veronica, to your point about there being some other movies that aren't these blockbuster movies. So one is The Dark Tower with Idris Elba and Matthew McConaughey. It's a kind of futuristic gunslinger movie, which I'm looking out for. There's another one, which is a scary one, which is called It Comes at Night. And the question is, do you give refuge to people outside when they're asking to come into your home, and you have to make this decision because this is a scary movie. There's also a movie called Rough Night, which is Scarlett Johansson, and they come together as college pals, and there's a murder that occurs, and I'm looking forward to that. So there are a number of smaller movies as well. We can't get through them all, but I just want to mention a couple of them as well.
And what is on your playlist this weekend, Reggie?
So this weekend is... This weekend, this is a tough one, but I think this weekend I am going to be dragged back to Fate of the Furious because my daughter wants to see it again, and I think I'm going to take my wife to Baywatch.
All right, we'll leave it there, Reggie. Thanks a lot for joining us.
No problem. Thank you so much.
That was Reggie Ponder, also known as Reggie the Real Critic. He appears weekly on Vocalo in Chicago, critiques movies for several other media outlets. He joined us today for a preview of movies coming out this summer. You can keep the conversation going, share your reviews of the latest movies you've seen, or let us know what you are looking forward to this summer. You can do that over at the Central Time Facebook page or tweet us at Central Time WPR.
Mos Eisley Spaceport. You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy. We must be cautious.
And we first visited that hive of scum and villainy 40 years ago today. Yes, a long time ago in a galaxy not very far away, Star Wars was released on this day in 1977.
Apparently the movie only opened in like 40-some theaters, a very limited release. But the movie did really, really well in those 40-some theaters, and it quickly went into wider release and into pop culture history.
And Rob, yesterday, Kate and I were talking about Top Gun. There's going to be a Top Gun 2. This is another one of those touchstone movies for our generation, for Gen X, and generations that came before and after. I mean, speaking for me, I had Star Wars figurines. I had Star Wars parties. I was Princess Leia on Halloween with the weird buns on the side of my head. So, yeah, this is a big day.
This is one of our most common and pop culture references behind the scenes here. Well, I'll say among the hosts of Central Time, the millennial producers, they don't play as much.
Yeah, hashtag what is Star Wars for them, but
well,
not for us.
Not quite that much, but they're not at that level of Star Wars. I won't say nerdery. How about appreciation? That's
right.
A polite way. And Star Wars versus Top Gun? Come on.
Star Wars.
Right, all the way.
Yep.
This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.